harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So, Jennifer, we'd like to hear what you have to say.
I'm going to scoot you guys over a little bit. I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. Brought some of my people tonight. If you haven't been here before, my sobriety date is May 4th, 1991. My home group is God Calling at the Kingsley United Methodist Church on Friday night, 7 o'clock. It's an 11-step prayer and meditation meeting. It's really a lovely meeting, not real big, kind of quiet and cozy. If that's the kind of meeting you feel like you need, we'd love to see you there. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a spiritual guide. I am a sponsor, and that is the great joy of my life today. One of many. So let's see where we are, okay? In step one, because some of us have been on this whole journey together, and in step one, we qualified for this program. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. In steps two and three, they helped us to begin to form a healthy relationship with a higher power of our own choosing. So we started to heal our spiritual malady. Steps four through seven, we started to heal our past and to begin having a healthy and loving relationship with ourselves, to forgive ourselves, to learn to like ourselves, to start to become the people that God would have us be, that we wanted to be, but never really were able to find a way to do that. There's a part, I know I told you in an earlier week, you cannot work the steps from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book, and that is still true. But Over time, I have come to really love how the 12 and 12 begins step 8. So I'm going to read to you from that book a little bit. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we've done. And third, thus having cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. This is a large order. It is a task in which we must perform with increasing skill, but never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. I really love that part of step 8 when they introduce it. So here we are at steps 8 and 9, where we begin to repair the damage that we've wrought by living a life run on self-will, selfishness, and self-centeredness that caused other people injury. And the step reads, we made a list, step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Now, I borrowed a little book during the pandemic from the 12-step meeting, the Tuesday night 12-step meeting, because I just love this little book and I've never found it anywhere else. The title is just, Rarely Have We Seen a Person Fail Who Has Thoroughly Followed Our Path. But it has a prayer in it for every step. And they are really lovely prayers. So I wanted to share step 8 prayer with you. Higher power, I ask your help in making my list of all those I have harmed. I will take responsibility for my mistakes and be forgiving to others as you are forgiving to me. Grant me the willingness to make my restitution. This I pray. Amen. So here we are at step 8, and again, get out the pen and paper because this is a written list. if we've been thorough, if we were thorough about steps 4 and 5, we have the list begun. We have people to put on our list that were on our resentment list that we need to make amends to, even though we thought it was all their fault when we started our fourth step. We find out that maybe we had a part as we go through it. Also, the harms done in sex relations, those people should also be on the amends list. But even taking from our fourth and fifth step, the list I found was not complete because I had financial amends to make that had no resentment attached to them. For instance, the landlady who I rented the apartment from in September moved out in December and never paid the rest of the money that I owed her. I had no resentment toward this woman, although she might have had resentment toward me, but she definitely belonged on my list. So that's one example of, you know, people who belong on our list of amends who really, you know, we didn't have a resentment or really a close relationship with, but we injured them, you know, in one way or another. Now, of course, when I was writing my list of people who I owe amends to, I started with my family because, because I injured them quite a lot. It was very difficult for my parents for a long time. They were afraid of the direction I was going in and the things that could happen to me. You know, I didn't even really understand that I ran away from home when I was 17. I thought I just like was taking a trip, and just that I hadn't mentioned it to my mother seemed like, I'll call her when I get there. And that's what I did. I was 3,000 miles away from home. And I called her and said, you know, I won't be going to school tomorrow, probably. My dad, I don't know. The injuries, you know, were just not being a good daughter. You know, I could have done better. I injured my husband quite a lot in my drinking years. There was a kind of hell in living with me when I was drinking sometimes. You know, you can be sure that when I walked in the door, I had thoroughly taken his inventory. But by the time I got to this step, you know, I had to look at myself. And these were the first on my list. My brother that I would call at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was drunk and leaving the bar to discuss how awful our childhood had been, because I just knew he wanted to talk about it right then, even though he was sleeping and probably had to work the next day. I don't even know, because I didn't care enough to ask. But you know, Terry and I and some friends, I think Susan might have been there too, went to a breakfast meeting some years ago, a brunch meeting. And there was a man from Ohio named Harlan that was speaking. He was a really special guy. And he said a lot of things that day that I've kept all these years. But he said this, and I thought, this is really important. He said, people say we always hurt the ones we love, but that's not true. The truth is, we always hurt the ones who love us. And I thought, whew, yeah, that would be me. And now, so I'm writing down, you know, the people that were on my resentment list, the financial amends, the family, the sexual harms done, these people who I owe amends. And in writing this list, I needed to seek counsel. I have always had a sponsor. But my judgment, even, you know, I mean, I was still in my first year of sobriety, I think, when I did this list. I was maybe 10 months sober when I did this list the first time. And again, the 12 and 12 tells us this goes on for a lifetime. All these steps do, really. But I needed to talk to my sponsor as I went through this. I needed to seek counsel, and I think it's emphasized over and over again that in these steps that we're going to talk about tonight, we really do need to work with a sponsor. My first list was incomplete because by the time, you know, at 10 months sober, I was not able to be as honest as I was able to be at 10 years sober. You know, honesty comes in degrees. There were things that I just wasn't ready to know that, you know, the Creator mercifully withheld from me until I was ready to know them. Not everyone on my resentment list should have been on my amends list. And I really wish Brenda was here tonight because this is, I thought of her when I was writing this, but I'm pretty sure we can all probably relate to this. I did not injure everybody who was on my resentment list. There were actually situations where I was injured. And you know, I'll just give you an example. My father, when I was a young preteen, remarried, and he married a gal who really had some issues with he and I having a relationship. And so it was very hard for him to continue to be a father. He tried, but it was, I think, more comfortable or easier for him to acquiesce and to his, you know, new life. And he got sober when I was 15 and, you know, tried again to, you know, make amends. But it was pretty difficult. She had issues that were unresolved, and she really thought there was something quite awful about him not being a part of her new family. She had three children that she brought to that relationship, and when my mother died, and actually when my son was born, she actually changed a bit. She seemed to want to have a relationship with my son, and she was always very good to him. But I was a young teenager who needed a father, and I had a resentment, you know, about that. I didn't cause it, I couldn't change it, and I didn't owe her an amend for it. I pray for her. That's what I can do with that situation. Now, I know that there are some situations, because I've been a sponsor of many women over the last 30 years, that are much more graphic and terrible than the one I just described, where no amends should be made, sometimes even for safety's sake. But you know, I trust that you all know what I mean, and we don't. That's why we seek counsel with our sponsors or, you know, spiritual guides, because sometimes it wasn't our fault. Sometimes it just wasn't. So I pray for my stepmother, and I have let her go. So now I have my list, and I'm ready, because you know I was like gung-ho AA girl, and I'm ready to go out and make these amends. I have become willing to the list. You know, I've gone over with my sponsor, willing to go out and make these amends. And that takes us to step 9. See this? Visual aids. I'm going to, Jessie would have had these. Jessie's here and she would have had beautiful posters. There we go. Because she's a great artist. This is where we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And there's a prayer in my little book that I borrowed. That no one knows I borrowed. I think somebody might know I borrowed it. I'll return it. I really something. This is the 9th step prayer. God, give me the strength and direction to do the right thing no matter what the consequences may be. Help me to consider others and not harm them in any way. Help me to consult with others before I take any actions that would cause me to be sorry. Help me not to repeat such behaviors. Show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love, and help me to live the spiritual life. Amen. I love this book. It's a little teeny book. Wonderful. So let's talk about what this step says. Direct amends. What are direct amends? Direct amends are face-to-face if possible. If I can make an amend sitting in a room looking at you, it's a little better than on the telephone or a text. I don't do text amends. I actually don't encourage text amends. What's an amend? Well, I know. Sponsoring by texting. I don't do that. I looked it up in the dictionary. You know how I do that. And an amend is to correct a mistake that one has made or a bad situation that one has caused. Wherever possible. This is a spiritual part to me, the wherever possible. I need to be ready. If I turn around in the grocery store and there's someone on my amends list that lives in California, I need to be ready to make that amend. And that's part of the preparation in step 8. That's part of the prayer, to be wherever possible. And I've had those situations happen. I really have. I remember, I think Ian was a baby. So that was maybe 4 or 5 years down the road. He was stroller ready. And we were walking, and there was a woman who I had worked for, who I drank on the job and left, didn't leave in good stead. I mean, she was really nice to me, too. But she lived in McCain, and I live on 10th Street. And we're strolling, and I go to the corner, and this woman is literally standing there on my corner. Like, she doesn't, her business is like on the south side of town, and she lives in McCain, and there she stood. I was ready. I made the amend. That was the opportunity, I didn't track her down. She had left the business where, that I had worked for her at, and so I hadn't been able to find her, but there she was, and this will happen in this step. This is a magical step. These kinds of things happen. So we're going to go through, I'm going to tell you how I blocked out these amends, kind of in categories, and how I still look at them. First of all, I think I'm talking about lifetime amends. There's some lifetime amends in my world. And those lifetime amends go to my parents. My parents have both passed as I've been in sobriety. My dad really died 5 years ago last week. My mom, 20 years ago. I tried to do the best I could with amends with both of them. I'm really glad to say that my dad and I spoke. He had moved to Atlanta the last 10 years of his life, but we spoke on the phone weekly, the last couple months of his life, every day. He died with 46 years of continuous sobriety. He was an inspiration to me. He was the beginning of the legacy in our family. And I hope that that we make him proud by showing up. My husband is a lifetime amend. We renewed our vows in sobriety because we had, not been very good to each other. Well, we've been married 43 years. We had not been very good to each other in our drinking years and probably a few years into sobriety. But when I think we were 8 years sober, Father Peterson renewed our vows for us. And so we began that a lifetime amend. My brother is a lifetime amend. He will always be my brother. I will always love him. I will not always agree with him on everything. But he's a wonderful man, and he has helped me out in some difficult situations. He was the one who said to me at the end of my drinking, you know, you can get off this elevator anytime you want. Guy's not an alcoholic, not a drug addict, never was. I don't know how he knew to say that. You know, God was working in my life long time before I got here. My best friend has been my best friend for 60 years. Yeah. She lives in Philadelphia. She's an incredible gal. I never thought I owed her an amend, you know, except to stay sober and not be like an annoying person calling her at weird hours. But I discovered, and this is why I say, and the book says too, that this is a lifetime step, really. She had been ill for some time. We didn't see each other a lot my first 10 years of sobriety. You know, I was getting well, and she was actually getting well with some physical illnesses that she had that were quite serious. And but we came back together, and we were... I told you about the 17 years old going, running away from home, but not really seeing it that way. More seeing it as like taking an extended vacation from school and here, and you know. She had asked me not to do that. She knew it was not a good thing or a healthy thing. And when we were talking a couple times, when we started hanging out together, when she would be in town or I would go to Philadelphia, she would say to me, you know, every day that you were gone, I would go to your mother's, the place that your mother worked, and I would ask her how you were and if you were okay. And I was like, oh, well, that's really... And by the fourth time, she said to me, you know, every day that you were gone, I went to your mother's job and asked her if you were okay. I realized, duh. You know, because this chick was, she's powerful. You know, she was a president of the student body, and everybody liked her, and, you know, she was a cheerleader too, and, you know, she had boyfriends, and I didn't think she would miss me. But she did, and I abandoned her. You know, I was her best friend. I was her best friend, like, all our lives. And I just wasn't there for her. So, you know, at 16 years sober, I finally made that amend. And, you know, you can ask my son, or my gal Jessie is here. I talk to her, text sometimes, sometimes on the phone, probably every other day. We communicate for years now, for many years now. But the most important part of the amend, the lifetime amend, of course, is to not pick up a drink. You know, that's the first thing that I needed to do for the people who loved me, was to not pick up a drink. Today, the most important thing I can do for the people who love me is not pick up a drink. Then there was my extended family, those amends. I have nieces, and they're beautiful, wonderful women today, but they were little when I got sober. Some were not yet born. I have wonderful sisters-in-law, and I have a cousin that I love very much, who lives in Boulder, Colorado, and just thank God her house is still standing, but many of her friends' houses are not after the tragedy fire that happened last week in Boulder. And, you know, I'll just talk to you about her. For years she had, she was very close to my brother and I, because she was an only child, and her parents were not, her father was not a very nice person, her mother was very quiet, and so she kind of counted on the extended family. When my grandparents were gone and her parents were gone, there was just my brother and I, her only family, really, and one cousin that she stayed close to. But she would ask me, like a second or third cousin, but she would invite me to Boulder, Colorado, like, please come, you know, and please come and visit. I'd really like for you to come. And, you know, I was like, yeah, you know. And about, I think it was about 7 years, 6 years ago maybe, we were in a situation where we could go to Boulder, Colorado. She invited us to Thanksgiving, and we got in our, I think we had a Jeep Cherokee or something, we packed it all up, and off we went to Boulder, Colorado. She had been inviting us for years. Please come and be a part of my life. I need family. And it was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. She's a wonderful person. She's just as sweet as you can imagine. She has a wonderful husband. He's a professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's interesting and nice. And what a gift it was for us, for me, you know, to be there and to have this, to be able to rebuild this relationship with. She's my first cousin, my mother's sister's daughter. And this year, last September, her daughter got married in Manhattan, and my husband and I went. Again, just had a wonderful, wonderful time. These are things I can do now. I can show up. You know, I send my niece Christmas or birthday cards with, you know, gifts in them now, and I don't miss a year or five like I used to. Like, it'd be big blocks of years where I'd go, oh yeah, that's right, it is her birthday. We have great nieces now and great nephews, and so there's a whole lot of them. But when there's a family get together, I'm there. I show up. So that's a lifetime amend. I kind of feel like I make lifetime amends to my son as well, because even though he wasn't born when I was drinking by the grace of God, because I think I would have been an awful mother. I don't think I was a great mother when he was little, because I was just getting, you know, I was young in sobriety. My amend to him, of course, is to never pick up a drink. Not today. Hopefully not tomorrow. And to be the best mom I can be today. Best wife I can be today to my husband. Best friend I can be to my friends. Best sponsor I can be to the women I love who I sponsor. Best aunt, cousin. You know, that's my amend. Those are lifetime amends. Then came the financial amends. Well, I told you about Polly, the lady whose apartment I rented, who I skirted out in the middle. I literally, in the middle of the night, packed the car up, went to Florida. And last year I was drinking. And the thing was, Polly lived on 10th Street. Well, I told you I live on 10th Street. I live in a house on 10th Street. So, yeah, I'm sober about a couple years, and I think Ian had just been born, maybe 3 or 4 years, and I knew I had to make this amend to her, and he hadn't been born yet, because this was an early amend, but I saw later on how incredibly important it had been to make this amend. This was an early amend, and the way that I was guided, advised to do it, was to go to her and tell her, you know, I had a problem with alcohol. I'm part of a fellowship, which, you know, in which we try to make things right. And I would like to pay the money that I owe you. I was pretty beat up financially, you know, because that was probably in my first year of sobriety that I did this amend. But I think it was, you know, I had been sober maybe 10 or 11 months, and I did have a job. It wasn't a very good job, but I had a little bit of money. And, you know, it tells us to make the best arrangement possible, to tell our creditor or whoever, you know, we're trying to apologize to, that we apologize, you know, for being tardy, and to make the best arrangement we can. So I could pay $10 a week. Because I was working as a waitress at the Holiday Inn South. That was my first job in sobriety. I was a creative director at Channel 24 before my drinking took off big time. Yeah. So, but it's okay. It all worked out. Really, really good. So I couldn't pay her $10 a week. And I went to the Sunday morning meeting at the club at 11 o'clock every single Sunday. That first 2-3 years I was sober. So I said, okay, here's what I can do. If it's okay with you, I will put $10 in an envelope and slide it under your door every Sunday morning on my way to the meeting at the club. Or I didn't say at the club, but to a meeting that I go to. And I will do that until I have paid the debt that I owe you. And she said, all right. So every Sunday morning, on my way to the club, I would put the $10 in an envelope. I would slide it under Polly's door. After about, I owed her thousands of dollars, right? I'm going to say after about maybe 9 or 10 months, I went to slide the envelope under the door, and she opened the door. And she said, you're done. That's enough. You have paid enough, and I wish you well. And that's how things go when we're willing to do, these simple things according to the instructions. Some amends cannot be made in person. Sometimes it's geographically impossible. I have a friend that I really injured. He was a great friend of mine. When I was in the Pacific Northwest, I was hoping, he lives in Oregon, I was hoping to get in touch with him and be able to make a direct amend, but I couldn't get in touch with him. He probably didn't want to talk to me, but I tried, probably sometimes we can't make an amend because the person is deceased that we owe the amend to. My grandfather, my father's dad, was a really sweet man, and it always bothered me that I had mononucleosis when he died. I was 16, I think, and I couldn't go to the funeral. Really loved him. He was a wonderful grandfather, and I always said to myself, I'm going to go visit his grave. I'm going to do that, and started drinking, never went to visit his grave. Then, after about a year or so I was sober, I had a gal named Kim ask me to sponsor her. And Kim had lost a child to SIDS. And we were working the steps, and she had not yet been to the cemetery to visit her daughter's grave. And so I said, I'll take you to the cemetery. We'll go together. Happened to be the same cemetery that, my family... It was the Wintergreen Gorge Cemetery. If you've ever been there, it's like miles of trees and big, big cemetery, big old cemetery. So we get there, and, there's an area that she went into. And the chances of my finding my grandfather's grave, having never been there since, for the funeral and having no idea where he was buried, didn't seem to be very good to me. But I had this memory. When my grandmother died, I was 5 years old, and I remembered a tree. Now, if you've been to Wintergreen Gorge Cemetery, there's more than one tree. There's more than hundreds of trees. There are a lot of trees there. But I thought, okay, I remember this tree. I remember standing under this tree. And, I've got my car parked, and Kim is over here, she's over there. So I walked over this tree. I thought, this tree looks familiar. I looked down, and, oh, yes, and I was right in front of my grandfather's and grandmother's grave. And I was able to make an amend to speak to my grandfather. I was able to visit his grave. It was 20 feet from my car. Yeah. You think this program's not magical, you just keep coming back. Then there's the amends that we shouldn't make lest we hurt somebody, and sometimes those, I had a few old boyfriends that I really, really wasn't very nice to. one of them I really wanted to be able to make amends to. When I was able to, I saw him at a social gathering, and it was appropriate. But when I really wanted to, I really, really hurt this guy. I was young, you know. That's not an excuse. That's the chronology of the situation. But I found out where he lived, and he was married, had children, had lost a child. I saw in the paper, and I thought, I'm not going to go knock on this guy's door. That's not going to help him. It's not going to help me. It's going to make his life more difficult and confusing. There are times when we really, you know, need to not do those amends. We have to stand ready. I mean, if I'm in Walmart and I turn around and he's standing there, I'm ready to make that amend. But I will not. I will not take the chance of injuring, you know, him or his family. There's amends that show up over time. You know, like I say, I had done my best, but obviously my list was incomplete. And when I really thought about it, there weren't a lot of people who came through my life when I was in my drinking years that I didn't hurt in some ways, sometimes very subtly, but everybody that I had contact with when I was living life on self-will really got shortchanged by me, I think. And I think you had a text come up or something, I don't know. Something happened about 7 years ago. It was time for my, 40-year class reunion. And nobody had done anything about it. It was the craziest thing. Because there was always, you know, there was always somebody who would do something about the class reunion. You know, those girls that always do the work. They weren't doing the work. You know, they weren't doing anything. So I called my best friend, Diane, in Philadelphia. I said, nobody's putting together a class reunion. This is like May. Usually you plan these things an entire year ahead of time, book the venue, all this stuff. And she said, yeah, I noticed that. And I said, well, you know, they have this new thing, Facebook. She said, oh, I'm not on the Facebook. I said, well, you know, we might be able to find the classmates if you get on the Facebook also. Because I've seen a lot of them on Facebook. Josh, I don't want to be on the Facebook. Well, she joined the Facebook. She still calls it the Facebook. I don't care if they changed their name or not. She's still calling them the Facebook. So she and I, so I went to see our class president, the guy who had been our class president. Oh, gosh, I'm going late, aren't I? Okay. Yeah, okay. And I said, how do I do this? And he said, get a committee. So I got a committee. You know, I put it out on the Facebook, and people said, yeah, I'll be a part of that. So we got a committee, and we got this class reunion put together. And as I was going through it, you know, I had been really ill the year before, and I could not figure out where I was getting the energy to do that. What was driving me to be so involved in something I never helped out with before. I couldn't figure it out. And then I said to my sponsor, about halfway through the planning, I said, oh my God, this is my amend. These are people I never saw. They were a part of my life for 12 years. I never saw them. I wasn't mean to them. I wasn't anything to them because they just weren't important to me. And now I was communicating with them and becoming friendly with them and finding out about their lives and caring about their lives. That class reunion was a love fest. And it wasn't just me who was making amends. Everybody made amends with everybody. It was unbelievable. It was magical, like nothing I have ever experienced. This program gave us that experience and a healing for so many people. It was incredible. So this never ends, and thank God it doesn't, because I would have missed that. So what if we go to make amends, it doesn't go well? If the person doesn't want to see us, if they don't want to accept our amends, well, the truth is it just doesn't matter. So what? It's not important. It really doesn't. We can't control other people or how they react to us. The purpose of amends is not to get them to like us. It's not to, you know, be forgiven. You know, we've already been forgiven. Purpose is to get for me to get rid of my fear, my guilt, by doing what I can to make things right that I had made wrong. It's to clear away the things that block me from having healthy relationship with my God and with my fellows. That's why we do step 9, so that we can move forward and have good relationships with people and hold our heads high and not be afraid to look people in the eye anymore. I'm not going to read, because we're so late, I'm not going to read the 12 promises, but halfway through this step, there's 12 important promises you can find in the big book that will come true, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They always materialize if we work for them. Thanks. Sorry I went so long.
Thank you, Jennifer. So now we have some time for questions, if anybody has a question for our speaker.
Hi, I'm Jessie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Jessie.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for inviting me. I have a question. So I wanted to make an amends to a guy friend of mine, and he died a couple years ago, but I've been around for 17 years, so he really just kept dodging me, and not that I like would reach out to him directly, but with his family and let him know that I need to talk to him, and never really said it was an amends, but I just needed to talk to him, and I never ran into him, and I thought I would. And then a couple years ago, he died from this disease. And, you know, I could go to his grave. But I feel cheated a little bit. I feel like I cheated him, that I could have tried a little harder. But I did try to just do it organically and run into him. I guess my question would be, what would you do at that point, knowing that, like, he passed away, and, you know, you can't really make that a direct amends? You could have. What do you do?
You know, I wanted to talk about Fred Sweeney. That may not seem like it's going to be the answer to your question, but it is. Fred Sweeney was, I met him when he was like 30-some years, so maybe 35 years sober, and he was sober a whole lot longer before he passed. But Fred Sweeney's wife died before he got sober, and Fred was never able to make amends to her. Well, he always wanted to. So what he did instead was he made a promise to himself that he followed through on, that he would always treat women respectfully, and he would never again be unkind or disrespectful to the people in his life, particularly women. That's part of it. Another thing that you can do is to write him a letter. And that letter is a prayer, you know. A lot of people do that, and it helps them. And there's no reason not to try that. It might help you to feel better about it. But, you know, I understand what you're saying, because I had that situation with a fellow in Oregon. I thought, I have done everything I can. It's just not, just keep missing him. I mean, other people I know have talked to him, but it's not happening. So so I'll probably end up writing a letter too. Sure.
Does anybody else have a question for Jennifer? If you're on Zoom, just go ahead and speak up. I think we're good. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you.